For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, Second City Hockey listeners, it's Dave Melton here, and before we get to the show, I wanted to let you in on a little secret. All of those ads you just heard, if you want to listen to the show without them, visit secondcityhockey.com and sign up for either one of our subscription tiers, where the perks include ad-free versions of the Musings on Madison podcast.
And with the first overall selection in the 2023 NHL Draft, the Chicago Blackhawks are very proud to select from the Regina Pats, the Western Hockey League, Connor Bedard.
That's good. Wild.
Good. Good.
Game on.
Game on.
Hey, you want to play some hockey?
Tell you, feels the wrong.
Fit.
Score Chicago.
Oh, my God.
Welcome in to another episode of Musings on Madison here on the Second City Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Dave Melton, the site manager at Second City Hockey. You can find me on Twitter at DMelt57, and I've got a full room here. We've got everybody here. It's our big season preview episode. We're very excited to get to this episode, but before we do all that, I just want to give everyone a kind of an update on the situation and just like the status of our website. Like, this is a very new thing. We've only been around for about 6 months now as an independent site. We're part of this Four Hockey Fans Network, but that's basic. There's no big corporation behind all that. It's us and all of our sibling websites that all got laid off by Vox Media earlier this year because they seemed like they saw little to no value in what we do. But if you're listening to this episode, we think that you might think differently about that. So if you want to support our work and ensure that we can keep this place going for the entire Connor Bedard era and maybe beyond that, seems like it's going to be a lot of fun. We've got some things that you can do to help us out. First off, wherever it is you are listening to this podcast, leave us a 5-star review. Say some nice things in the review. If you leave us 4 stars or fewer, we assume you're a Blues fan. Another thing you can do, visit secondcityhockey.com. We will have previews and recaps of every game all season long. If you're watching the game at home by yourself and you want to talk about the game with other Blackhawks fans, we will have game threads for every Blackhawks game all season long. That website is also where we're going to have exclusive content all season long that is just for our subscribers. There will be prospect reports. There's going to be player analysis. We're going to be doing more deeper dives on some of the younger players all season long. And if that is probably the best way you can support us now and down the road is by signing up for either one of the subscription tiers, $5 a month. That's what, like the price of a puck, I think. That gets you into the Corey Crawford tier. Two pucks, $10 a month. That's the Connor Bedard tier. Each one has its own perks. Details are up at the website, and you can sign up through secondcityhockey.com. And if that all isn't enough for you, you still want to support us even more, we've got merch. It's at secondcityhockey.com on the navigation bar. Click merch. There's a whole bunch of stuff there. T-shirts, hoodies, hats, socks, or not socks, shoes, slippers, clocks, stickers, a whole bunch of stuff. Go check it out. Another way you can support us and ensure we can keep doing what we're doing. And the last thing we'll tell you is spread the word about our website. Tell a friend, tell a family member, tell an enemy, whatever. Anything you can do. We just want this to become one of the biggest and best places on the internet for people to talk and watch and read about Blackhawks hockey. And I think we're all along for the ride. We're all just getting started here. So we invite you and anyone else you know to come along with us. So now that lengthy preamble is out of the way, I guess I could bring everybody else in because they've been waiting quietly for Fett. Up first, I forgot. Hang on. We have to change up the order because I forgot to do something. We're going to introduce first. She's not on Twitter, but she's at secondcityhockey.com under the name LBR, where she is the Second City Hockey bulletin wall of text. It's Betsy.
I have just become the, like, everybody's like the whole Atlanta might get another hockey team thing has been going on for a couple of months, and everybody's like, where even is this place? So now I'm officially like the person who's like, I can tell you. And then I'll say words like outside the perimeter, and they'll be like, the perimeter of what? I was like the perimeter of this weird highway that wraps around Atlanta. I don't know how to explain it. Like, it's so stupid. Does Atlanta deserve a third team? I don't know, but I am hopeful.
Do we need to add a official Atlanta correspondent to your title?
Once they build the arena and I can go to, it's going to be so far away though. somebody was talking about how great it is for the Braves, because the Braves are like where the people are, but the Braves are only like 15 miles from where they used to be. Like, it feels like it's farther because they're in the suburbs, but they're still. It's still technically only 15 miles. It takes like 40 minutes because of traffic, but still, that's not this far.
Is the stadium going to be anywhere near where the stadiums where the Falcons and the Hawks play? Hawks, not.
No.
Okay.
Both of the, so
that's the only part of Atlanta I know, because I was there a year ago.
Both of those are in downtown. The Braves play in a place called Cumberland, which is northwest. Ish. And then where the arena is supposedly going to be is like 30-ish miles northwest of the downtown area. The Gladiators aren't that far away from them, probably like 20 minutes. So okay. If anybody's ever been to where the Gladiators are, they're up a completely different highway, but they're not that far apart. Getting to the Gladiators, last time I went to a Thrashers night and it took an hour.
We will submit all of this for the Georgia Tourism Board, I think.
Yeah, if anybody ever wants to know all about Georgia's stupid highways and traffics, I'm your girl.
All right. Also with us this evening, he's on Twitter at Mill182, and he is to Second City Hockey what Walter Becker is the Steely Dan. It's Mill Savage.
Oh, that's a good shout out.
Yeah, I think Spencer Hall, probably the best college football sports writer in the world. Some point this summer, he tweeted out, I have a week every year where I listen to nothing but Steely Dan for a week, and I'm in the middle of it right now. And I listened to a lot of Steely Dan this summer because of that tweet.
And I'll take it.
There's some good stuff there. I don't think I fully appreciated Steely Dan enough.
You know, on more hockey-related terms, this is our season preview. And we're already here. And I was like, maybe last week, our good friend of the pod, Ben Pope, got the cover of the paper, which great, you know, happy for him there for the sports section. And it's this Bedard related new era Hawks piece. And up in the corner, it's like every other Chicago team in hell. And yeah. I'm just like, wow, by the time the season got here, while the Hawks are still going to have their battles, that turned around quick.
I'm working on a thing that if I can put it all together, it may be up at Second City Hockey right now as you're listening to this podcast. But this might actually be like the last year and a half might be, statistically speaking, like the worst era in Chicago sports of this century.
I think it's bad. It very well could be.
It's real bad. Even the women's teams that have been pretty good in their shorter lifespans are having really bad times.
Yeah, and the Wolves could even win, and they wouldn't count because that's your enemy. So
yeah, we don't care about the Rosemont Wolves on this podcast. Thank you very much.
Yeah, rough time. So, I mean, not bad for us to be excited about something to write about. But yeah. I was like, wow, we were dead last a couple of months ago.
Yeah, I know. No, everything's coming up Millhouse.
Yeah, I'd say.
Also with us this evening, he is the official Second City Hockey Pizza correspondent, Eric Gegenheimer.
That's right. Yeah, it's a real sad state of affairs out there. I just feel bad for anybody who really cares about the Bears, like Dave and my dad, unfortunately, because there's just no joy to be had at all. And we've all suffered through those seasons on the teams that you care about where it's just you just get punched in the face jump. And then it's all just downhill from there. So
it's been fitting that the Spanish Love Songs released an album about a month or two ago called No Joy. And that is exactly how I feel about the Chicago Bears. And that is all I want to say about the Chicago Bears, because I'm going to talk about a team that gives me a little bit more joy, hopefully, this year.
Yes. Moving on.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. That's the end of Bears Corner. We're done. So on Tuesday night, we will get the first official game of the Connor Bedard era with the Chicago Blackhawks when they play the Pittsburgh Penguins in Pittsburgh. And then they turn around the next night and play the Boston Bruins. So obviously big season preview edition tonight. And without too much more of a preamble, I think the general idea of what I'm going to do here for the group is I'm just going to throw out some prompts, some either ors, some over unders, and hopefully we'll get to every player on the roster. And we're just going to talk about just everything anything we're excited to see or want to see or hope to see out of the group this year. So this first one, I'm going to swing over to Betsy, Eric, and Mill. If you want to chime in after Betsy talks, please do so. But this is the first question I have: is Connor Bedard, will he have more games played this season or more points scored this season? Which is effectively asking you, is he going to be a point per game player?
So, it's a hard one to answer. I think he'll be around that because I think even by himself, I think he could do that. I think anywhere between 70, like, you know, 0.85, 0.9, would be fine too. The only reason I'm iffy on it is simply because I don't have a whole lot of confidence in the rest of the lineup to support him. I know he can do a lot, but I don't think he can do as a rookie by himself. Like McDavid at least had people, Crosby had people, Kane and Taze had people around them. Bedard has the ghost of Taylor Hall and
we've already killed Taylor Hall.
He's like a ghost a little bit. And then some rotation of Donato, Tyler Johnson, maybe Perry. I like these are all guys that their primes were, if they ever had them, because I don't know if Donato ever did. Were like,
tell us what you really think.
You know, like it's been years, so I think a point per game is probably not outside the real. Like that's probably pretty good. He could probably do that.
Okay, but not like Crosby had 102 and 81, and this is something I think we're working on for an article as well. But Crosby had 102 and 81, 81 games. Ovechkin had 106 and 81. Nate McKinnon, just for another name, was 63 and 82. Austin Matthews was 69 and 82, so that was a nice season for him. So there's like it's hit or miss, and I'm the thing you mentioned about line mates, I think, is the most intriguing thing to watch, not only in this season, but in the future, is who's going to win the lottery to play with Connor Bedard.
Yeah. And I mean, look at last year's team. I think this team might be a little bit better, but like maybe they were the worst offensive team in the league. The worst offense. And not all of it was just on the players. There wasn't a whole lot happening system wise either. So we'll see. We'll see. Well, like, let's hope.
I mean, the leading point producer on the team last season was Max Domi with 49 points, and he only played 60 games with the Hawks.
Yeah.
So the leading returning, the leading player that's back on the team with points last season is Andreas Athanasiou, who had a 20-20-40 season. So, and he's been skating mostly on the second line with Lucas Reichel and Phil Kurashev, and I think we'll get to, I'm sure we'll loop them into some discussions down the road. Eric or Mill did. Eric, I'll ask you first. Did you have any thoughts on the Bedard thing?
Yeah, it's interesting. Looking at that Crosby season a little bit more, I think it's kind of more parallel than we think. And yeah, he had some guys, but you want to talk about ghosts of guys. Those dudes were old. Crosby had 44 more points than the next highest scorer on that Penguins team. So that feels kind of like a parallel to me about Bedard a little bit. And I'm going to say I think he ends up around a point per game. So I think he ends up 82 something a little bit, maybe, you know, right in that wheelhouse. I think it's going to take a little while for him to kind of adjust to everything. But I mean, we've seen he still has no problem making plays. He hasn't really finished with scoring the way that I think we'll see him finish in a couple months. But he's facilitating and he's getting assists. So I think that that'll help him a lot as far as the points go. And it'll take a while to figure out the lines, to figure out who he's going to play with. But I think ultimately I would not be surprised to see him get up there and be right around a point a game.
So what you're saying is 37-year-old Mark Recchi and 36-year-old John LeClair were not the best ways for Sidney Crosby to start his NHL career?
Not necessarily. Yeah. I don't know if you want to put them up there with Perry and Foligno, but
yeah.
No, I mean, Crosby came in and he did a lot of it himself. And I think that it'll be the same thing with Bedard. He's going to do a lot of stuff himself.
And now I'm looking at who Ovechkin started with. And if any of you could name any of the next five or six top scorers behind Ovechkin on the 05-06 Washington Capitals, I might just go buy you a t-shirt or something, because there's no way any of you should know these names. There's only one I even know, huh?
Al Iafrady.
No. Mill, Bessie, do either one of you have guests? There's a former Blackhawk down the list in Brian Muir, who was 10th on that team with 26 points. No one remembers the Halcyon days of Danish Zubris.
I don't even remember who was Mike Green was still on the team then.
That was probably before him. Yeah, it was before Green got there. This number two
is Adam Oates Zubris. Still there?
He is not. It's Jeff Halpern, Brian Wilsey, Chris Clark, Matt Pettinger, Ben Clymer, Brian Sutherby. I don't know who the fuck any of these people are. Olaf Kolzig was in net. There you go. That's the only name I know. Jeff Halpern was the captain, apparently. So that team finished with 70 points. So that, but Ovechkin had 106, so that was cool. Mill, did you have anything? Around, go ahead, Mill.
I was just going to say that was around the time, maybe a little bit before, that the Hawks acquired, sorry, I'm blanking.
Havlat?
No. Hold Sharp? On. I'm sorry. Hockey has been not on my mind lately. Like as far as the past, like 2006. Once I get into mid-season form here in a couple of weeks, I'll be okay with
you're my not brain you're not into crap. Full you're not into full remember some guys mode yet.
No, I'm. We will be remembering lots of guys pretty
well,
soon. Here.
Well, we've already remembered the ghost of Taylor Hall apparently. So,
but as far as the Bedard thing goes, I think he could hit it, but I would bet the under. That way, if he hits it, I'm happy that he hit it, and if he doesn't, I win money.
You're hedging your emotional bets here?
Yeah, I mean, why not? They're going to stink, so he's going to be fun to watch, but I don't know. Anyways, if I think of who I was – if it comes up of who I was thinking of, I'll just
– Was it Brian Smolinski?
No, I'm thinking of a good player.
Okay. Hey, at least leave smoke out of this.
Bondra.
Oh, Peter Bondra. Yeah.
I said that was like that weird window where he was not the Capitals, but he wasn't a Hawk yet.
Yeah.
Right?
I think so, yeah.
Because he scored his 500th goal as a Hawk.
Good times.
I also have a Peter Bondra screaming Eagle Capitals jersey, so that's like one of my favorites. Anyways, I'm good.
Actually, Peter Bondra was on the Atlanta Thrashers that season. He was saying hi to Betsy. So,
wow, we just came full circle.
There we go. There it is. So that's why they don't pay me the big bucks. I'll go over to Eric for this one. And this is where if Connor Bedard is going to be a point per game player, this is where and why it'll happen. I'm going to give you an over under here, Eric. 22% for the Chicago Blackhawks power play. To give you some context, Last year, they were 28th at 16.38%. A 22% ranking would have been 13th in the NHL last season. Do you think the Hawks get up that high?
No, I could not tell you the last time I had any type of confidence in a power play that the Chicago Blackhawks ran. And I think, you know, he'll be great on the power play once they kind of figure it out and figure out who else is going to play with him and how to utilize him. But I don't think that they're going to every other team is going to scheme to try to stop him from shooting. And that'll open up some stuff. And kind of like we saw yesterday with, you know, the cross ice to Hall, who dumped it into Perry, and then Perry made the move and scored. They'll get a little bit of stuff like that, but I don't think they hit 22%. So I'm going to go under.
Mill, I'll go over to you next. What do you think?
I can't fathom them hitting 22% either. I mean, I think that they can improve the power play, you know, from last year, but that's it is in the grand scheme of this, like, you know, it doesn't seem like a lot of improvement, but that, you know, 6% or 5 point, whatever, is a giant jump.
I should have went down to 21% and set the bar there. Although I think both of you would still probably wobble under it. 21% would have been 18th in the league last year. So still,
I also don't middle know that their of the coaches, pack.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I also don't know that their coaching is looking for that right away.
Okay. Betsy, what about you?
Oh, definitely under. I'm the same way. Like, I'm trying to think, like, even when, like, Kane could rack up a bunch of points on the power play, even when it was pretty terrible. So I think, like, Connor Bedard will probably get a bunch of points. Kane had like 30 points on the power play one of the years they were in the bottom 10, recently-ish, I want to say. I think Connor Bedard and maybe Reichel and a couple of others could get some decent chunk of points, but overall, the power play, what did they go, 1-12 so far in the preseason?
It hasn't been great.
No, it's been, and it hasn't looked great. It's looked as bad as usual. Under.
Well, I feel like I'm maybe not all the way up to 22%, but I feel like the power play is going to be better this year. Because I think having Corey Perry in front of the net, being willing to get his ass kicked for the sake of a power play success, I think that is an element the Hawks have not had. And he's good at it. And I don't think the Hawks have had that since Andrew Shaw left. So I feel like that, adding Connor Bedard, and then I think that will make Seth Jones better at the point. If you can find one or two other guys, like, I don't know if Reichel has a good run on the power play. Like, I don't think the power play is going to be good. I feel like it should be less of a disaster this season, because I think there's enough talent there. And because of the specific roles that they occupy, like Corey Perry had 25 points last season in Tampa, 12 of them were on the power play. So he can still do something on the power play. So I think it's more and Bedard, I'm sure will figure it out how to be a good power play player. So I think I'm a little bit more bullish on the power play than everybody else here, it would seem.
I will settle for if they can get zone entries without doing a fucking drop back.
Oh, that's already back. They've been dropping it all over the blue line.
I know they're tossing it halfway down the ice back to Bedard to let him figure out how to get into the zone.
You could have stopped with I'll be happy if they have zone entries.
That's true.
Half the time it's just like, nope. They should be a lot better than last year, though. I mean,
yeah, I could see them jumping 2 or 3 percentage points, if not 4, get up near like 20. 22 is kind of like, that's ridiculous. That's a silly thing.
Sorry, Betsy, didn't mean to make silly
statements.
Really silly, silly.
Okay. All right. I got two out over my skis on that one. We'll dial it back.
Can I just say, if that did happen, then Betsy will have to be in the comments explaining to everybody that they're not good. The power plays.
Yeah.
We an anomaly.
We need to have
this video.
We need to have this season bookmarked, or this conversation bookmarked, because I hope the Hawks start on a power play heater, just go like 40% for the first.
That'd be
awesome.
It's kind of like what Mill said before. It's like, we're all selling the under, but we'll be happy either way because you'll have made money or your team will be good. on a specific play part of the game. I don't think they'll be good in general, but like maybe one area.
All right, Mill, let's have a fun one here. What's the higher number? Corey Perry penalty minutes or Connor Bedard points? What do you got?
Connor Bedard points. Perry's too old and lazy to try to take penalties, I think.
He had 95 last season in Tampa, so.
Yeah, but Tampa was playing for something. Like,
okay.
If they're going to be bad, I mean, I'll see him taking the occasional stupid fight because they're getting their ass kicked and he wants to, you know, quote unquote, supply some energy.
Or he wants to get to the shower while the water's still hot.
That too. But I don't know that he plays a lot of games either. Like, what if he only plays 50 or 60?
Yeah,
I mean, he's getting up there in age.
He did play 80. He's played 81 and 82 in the last two seasons.
He actually might not be that old. I just think he came into the league about 20 years ago.
No, well, he did. He came into the league very young, but he's
38.
He'll be 39 in May.
I mean, then that's up there. I mean, for hockey.
For hockey,
I guess. He has a lot of miles on him is kind of what I'm thinking, though, because those Ducks teams used to make some playoff runs, a lot of seven-game series. And then, you know, Tampa and Montreal, even though those were both finals appearances that he lost, right?
Yeah. So
was he on the Dallas team, too? No.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
Maybe. Did he lose in the final 3 years in a row?
He did. Yeah. He lost 3 years in a row.
Holy fuck.
It was beautiful.
I just forgot about that until now because he's so like.
Oh, Betsy. So
he's
mean.
Just one of those players that after the Hawks stopped being good and stopped playing the Ducks in the playoffs or whatever, you kind of just like, yeah, he's on this team, but I don't care. You know, he's one of those like, eh. But Dave, you're right. He did have a lot of penalty minutes last year. Could happen.
I think the animosity just kind of like it peaked with that series. He was so easy to dislike. Like he did, but he. It wasn't involved with the Hawks as much, so I feel like it wasn't but he's already getting standing ovations in the preseason, so I'm sure he'll be a cult hero by Christmas, so whatever.
Not for me.
I'm going to be like the last holdout.
Yeah. Yes, I think you are, Betsy, because the first preseason game, I think it was the first preseason game at the United Center, he got a pretty big ovation from the crowd.
Me and Didi in the comments. It'll be me and Devil Dog.
There you go.
I'm not much of a fan either, but I just feel like he's holding somebody's roster spot warm for the future.
Sure. I think I wrote the article about how I think he'll be useful. I also was like, I'll gag every time I use that phrase in conjunction with it. And I did this last time. I was like, I feel kind of gross saying this, but he had a good game, you know?
Yeah. But again, like, is he going to get, this is another thing. Are the Hawks going to trade a bunch of guys at the deadline again?
I'd assume so, yeah.
So, like, him and Paul, like, some of these guys could just be doing the Domi tour here.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And it makes sense with that GM.
Who has, like, I don't even know if, who has what? Taylor Hall has a no movement clause. Right?
I don't think so. I don't think he would have approved the trade.
He had one, and now he has a. It went down to an NTC.
Yeah, he probably gets to pick 10 or whatever the number is. But I just mean like, if one of those teams is a playoff team and the Hawks are at the point in the year where they're completely just struggling to get to 500, he's probably going to want to dip unless he's in love with Connor Bedard and playing
Taylor,
on his line.
Taylor Hall is a 10-team no-trade list for this season and the next.
There it is, 10. Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
Neither Foligno or Perry have one, which is interesting, but they're also both making $4 million.
Yeah, retain that.
But Hawks can retain, right? Yeah. I mean, they
only retain a certain number.
And they're already
retaining one, so they have two more spots. They could retain on both of them, but then on nobody else.
And is anybody else making more than that? That would you want to trade?
I don't know, like Murphy.
Athanasiou.
Yeah, Murphy. No, I think Athanasiou. They just gave him a 2-year deal. If they turn around and trade him a couple months into it, I think that's bad form.
Yeah,
but I mean, outside of, I don't think anybody's taking Seth Jones or anything too nuts. So it's probably Murphy would be the only one. Maybe Mrazek if somebody got desperate.
If Murphy plays like he's been in a previous regular season, I don't think anybody's going to want to trade for him. True. I hate to say that. I like Connor Murphy, but it was a rough going.
Yeah. So well,
this is the same league where somebody gave up a first round pick for Ben Chiarot. So
there you go.
Never say never.
You're totally right about that. I just don't want to test our luck.
So I'm going to jump this down to what has been the de facto second line in the preseason. It seems like it's going to be the second line to start the season. Who's going to have, and I think we're up back to Betsy, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So who's going to have the most points? Kurashev, Reichel, or Athanasiou?
Reichel.
Why Reichel?
I want him to.
I mean, that is absolutely the correct answer.
I mean, I genuinely want, I think he's the most talented of the three. I don't think Kurashev, we all like Kurashev, but I don't know if this is necessarily
noted as a breakdown either.
Yeah. So we'll see. I hope. Let's hope. I want it to be Reichel. So I'm gonna put that down as a hopeful answer. Reichel's my boy.
Eric, what about you?
I think I'm going to go Athanasiou. And I think that's just because he'll kind of get a little bit more opportunity. And for whatever reason, I have a feeling he'll get some overtime stuff with Bedard a little bit more. And, you know, they connected for that St. Louis game. They got the game winner off of that. So I think he'll get some looks. He'll get some length there. And that might be enough to get the difference. And I think Reichel, too, it's going to take him a while to figure out center. And then I'll kind of hold him back a little bit more. So that's probably the margin right there. That's the difference to me between those two.
Well, then, Mill, I guess it's up to you.
I kind of like Reichel if he can play the center role, because I think he is a nice, like, vision passing. Like, he'll be able to find guys where they can score as long as they can bury it. He can score himself. I like the duality of him picking up assists and goals to make that point total.
Yeah, see, I had this question in my head, but I couldn't come up with an answer, because I feel like the veteran experience for Athanasiou gives him a head up on the other two, and that he's had 40 and I think a 50-point season in his career at some point. So, and I feel like he's going to get a lot of top six play this season, so he's going to put up points. But I think I'm going to settle on Reichel, because I think there's going to be a hard charge down the stretch for him, and I think that's going to be – I think Reichel's going to get him at the end. I think it might be similar to what one of you said about Bedard, and that it might take him a while initially to figure things out at the NHL level, but once he does, he's going to start catching up point-wise. Like, Reichel won't get as many as Bedard, but the principle of better in the second half of the season than in the first half applies here.
I think, too, just for the Hawks' sake, if he's going to become like a true guy for them, he has to start taking that jump this year.
I would agree completely. So, talked a lot about forwards. Don't want to ignore all the defensemen. And I think what I want to go to here is ice time figures. And I think we're all can safely assume Seth Jones is going to be number one on the team in ice time this season. So I think we're back to Eric now. Who's going to be number two?
To rub it in my face, Wyatt Kaiser.
I thought you were going to say Nikita Zaitsev, just to be funny.
No, God, no. That's. I think we'll all start drinking heavily if it's Nikita Zaitsev while we're talking.
Or we'll start working on our draft boards in December.
Absolutely. No, I think I'm getting the feeling Korchinski's going back to the W. Just everything everyone's saying, that's what it seems like. He's going to get some games and he's going to go back. So I think Kaiser will probably end up on the second power play, and he's going to play a lot. He's going to play with Jones a lot, and Richardson loves him. Everybody loves him. So far, he looks really good. So I don't see why you wouldn't give him every opportunity and just kind of let him play as much as he can. So I feel like it's going to end up being Kaiser.
Mill, who's your number two Blackhawks ice time defenseman at the end of the season?
This may not be the most realistic pick, but just to like rub it in my face, it's probably going to be Jared Tenorti on any given night that I have to write about them. Like 25 minutes, you know, just I'm going to be fucking screaming at the TV, drinking heavily while making my draft board. The whole nine.
Well, thoughts and prayers to your liver.
It thanks you.
You're welcome. Betsy, what about you?
I go back and forth between Kaiser and Vlasic. I mean, Richardson has raved about Kaiser. Like, I don't know if he's as talked as positively about a prospect other than Connor Bedard. And of course, everybody's talking about Connor Bedard, but like, then he has Kaiser. It's interesting. And because I've always been a Kaiser fan, but I also always was like, I'm probably a little biased because I watch more college games than anything else. But Vlasic also will be interesting because he actually played more minutes of all of the kids last year, about a minute more than Kaiser did. And he played a lot with Seth Jones. And in the most recent game, Vlasic was with Seth Jones. And he played really well there. So it'll be interesting to see those kids battle it out. The total time is also going to be something to watch because Seth Jones played like over 24 minutes a night last year. And the next highest was Jack Johnson with under 20.
It was at 1950.
Yeah. And then it was Vlasic.
Yep.
So, I mean, obviously he only played in six games, so that skews his minutes, but that's an interesting thing to note. So, I hope it's a kid. I want it to be one of them. I don't think it should be Connor Murphy, for example. Not just because I don't think he, unless he's, he has reversed course in his downwards spiral from last year. then yeah, I think it should be one of them. I'm going to say final answer, Vlasic. Yeah.
Yeah. I have a hard time disagreeing with Mill and Eric, just reading, just seeing what everyone is saying about Wyatt Kaiser and the fact that he is a little bit farther along. Well, I guess more than Korchinski, like he's kind of behind Vlasic and well, he's roughly the same age as Phillips, but it just seems like Kaiser is more of a, I don't want to say finished product, but maybe closer to a finished product because of how much ice time he got in college.
Yeah, he baked more.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He spent some more time getting cooked up. So, yeah, it really seems like Wyatt Kaiser is going to be one of the more probably the most interesting player to watch on the blue line. I don't know if I can share Eric, your thing that you're feeling that Korchinski's staying or going to go back to the WHL. I don't know if I share that feeling. It's more mostly off a gut feeling. Was there something that somebody said or something you read that led you to believe that?
It's normally for stuff like that. I just feel like when you're seeing every beat guy all kind of say the same thing. And I think it's Lazarus has said it multiple times that Davidson said, like, even if he goes over the nine and we burn the year, we still might send him back. And Davidson was actually on In Between Periods last night and they were kind of talking to him about that. And he was, you know, very evasive and didn't say anything distinctly. But I mean, at the end of the day, Korchinski's play is going to do it more than anything. That's what's going to determine it. But just the way that they're kind of backpedaling a little bit makes me feel like, and it's nothing but my own intuition. There's nothing that I've seen where it's like, you know, oh, absolutely, this is going to happen. That's just what it feels like to me.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure that the Blackhawks have made that decision yet. I feel like they are waiting to see how the first nine games go. But I guess we'll find out as a season.
Which is good. They should.
Yeah.
That's absolutely what they should do. So yeah. That's great if that's the case.
It's going to be interesting to see like the down in like the third pairing, what happens with like the Vlasics and Phillips of the world, because that if Korchinski stays up like that, so that gets pretty crowded pretty quickly.
Well, yeah, especially if they keep Zaitsev and, you know,
Well, that was my thought. If someone might get someone's contract might get launched somehow. Bought out.
Well, and they can send him to Rockford. He just has to go through waivers, right? Nobody's claiming him.
I would assume not, unless somebody needed, like the Hawks got Jared Sernorty last year as a waiver claim. And that was, I don't think people were expecting that, but the Hawks needed a veteran body and that's what he provided. So maybe there's a team out there that needs an Nikita Zaitsev shaped veteran body.
I think they'd be more likely to send Phillips down
Yeah.
It's not that Phillips is a little bit, he's got like maybe more raw potential than Vlasic does. He's more athletic, for example, and he's a better skater. Vlasic is more educated in the game. Like he's developmentally further along. And Kaiser is the most well-rounded. So if I had to choose of the three, I would go Kaiser, Vlasic to start and then rotate them out into Rockford if you need to, if they start to struggle or something like that. Though, again, the whole up-down thing didn't help some kids last year. So they've got to be careful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
So, sticking with the blue line, like, I'm on Mill now, right? Mill, your turn?
Yes, sir.
So, we're gonna stick with the veteran blue liners. We're going to leave Seth Jones out of this. We're going to go focus on the rest of them. We're going to assume that there's an accurate wins above replacement statistic in hockey that basically measures how much a respective player contributes to a win over the course of a season. If that stat were to exist at the end of the season, which veteran defenseman is going to have the highest among Tenorti, Murphy, and Zaitsev?
Oh, man. I'm going to say Connor Murphy, but I feel like even if he doesn't play well, he's more fundamentally sound than the other two. That's why. Like, if he plays well, that's a pretty obvious choice.
Yeah, right.
But the other two seem to end up on the wrong thing of the wrong side of plays more often because they're like out of position. Whereas like I feel like Connor Murphy just gets burned like 1v1 more often.
Okay.
That's just a guess.
Yeah. Well, most of these are guesses, Bill. I'm guessing as I come up with them. So
in my I mean, like, because it's like a, you know, there's not really a way to quantify that stat off the top, you know.
Yeah, it's that's still like I know there are models and such out there, and how accurate they are or how reliable they are, I think, still up in the air. Some people get there, and you can get really bogged down in the numbers. Sometimes it's just like, when this guy's on the ice, bad things seem to happen. And then you can usually quantify that by some manner. And I guess we'll see.
Yeah, they stink.
Betsy, what about you?
Well, I'll point out that I think Tenorti of the three won that prize or whatever you want to say. He was the best in terms of like war and gar and everything last year because he didn't always face the toughest competition. Like there's some context missing from that stat as it is. So Connor Murphy got like destroyed in it last year, like terribly. So it was actually kind of depressing. So I probably whoever's going to play in the bottom pair with the kid, you know, like there's going to be one of those veterans that doesn't get as high, like they're just going to get softer minutes. And I'll go with Tenorti again because he fluffed it out last year.
This kind of reminds me of the last Duncan Keith season in Chicago, where they were still trying to use him as their number one defenseman, and he really wasn't that anymore. So he was just getting roasted by the top players in the NHL. And it seemed like the view from everywhere outside of Chicago was, hey, Duncan Keith's really bad now. And it was more of, hey, they still think Duncan Keith's 30 or 28 years old and he's not, and they're still trying, and they're throwing him into terrible situations.
Yep.
Yeah. The utilization is a big thing. And I think that's part of what's hurt Murphy so bad, in the last couple of years. And I agree with Betsy. I think it'll be Tenorti, but just for sheer lack of minutes, he'll play less. So he won't be exposed as much. And I don't want to keep dumping on Zaitsev, man, but like there was a thing today, and it was he hired some like sports medicine specialist.
He had a trainer in Florida. I think this was another. I think Ben Pope wrote about that.
Yeah, but he basically went down like, yeah, I'm just not. It's my body's not responding the way that it used to. Like something's got to be going on. And the guy was like, no, everything's good. You're just bad now.
Which my answer on Saturday morning.
Yeah, exactly. But so, I mean, I don't think Zaitsev will be around all that much and will play all that much. So yeah, I'll say Tenorti. I'll agree with Betsy.
It would be funny. Like this podcast will be live before we know the opening day roster. It'd be funny if they make some sort of move right before it starts to like buy him out or trade him or whatever. And then we've talked about it more than he's going to be on the team this entire season. So
it's just the fact that they haven't, it just seems kind of strange. And it makes me think that they're going to roll with him at least for some portion of the season, because otherwise, they had a window to buy him out earlier this summer, but they chose not to do that.
Yeah.
I feel like our GM here wants to get whatever he can for anybody. And as soon as he sees that he can't get anything for Zaitsev, it's going to be a quote unquote conditioning assignment a la Dave Boland in Florida.
It'll be a conditioning assignment in a remote part of Russia. They're gonna send him to the KHL to skate with Michkov.
Yeah, exactly. They're gonna send them straight to O'Hare Airport.
All right, so we're back to Eric now. I think
Betsy.
I should have had some sort of board where I could keep track of all this. I was thinking all day of trying to come up with a good way to talk about the goalies. And using the same prompt idea, and I just couldn't think of one. So I don't really know what there is to say about the goalies. Like Peter Mrazek is here for one more season. He has a contract through the end of this upcoming season, and it seems like then he leaves, and ideally Soderblom takes over next season because Soderblom plays so well this year that he earns a starting role. Like, that's it, right? Like, is there anything else to say about the goalie situation?
No, that's the hope.
That's the hope. There you go. Exactly. We don't know if it will happen, but that is the hope.
All my answers are hope-based at this point.
Okay. Eric, did you have anything else to add about the goalie thing? Because I got nothing.
No, I mean, and there's really no intrigue like whatsoever outside of just how well Soderblom plays and like kind of when they give him the crease and let him like get a big string of starts in a row to see if he can kind of run with it, which yeah. I mean, developmentally, I guess if they come out and they're pretty bad, then maybe that doesn't happen until later on the season, because they messed with that dude's confidence big time last year, not necessarily by choice. But so I'd like to think that, they're a little bit more careful with him and how they're going to weaponize him, how they're going to use him this season. And they won't just toss him out there, if they're getting their asses whooped every single night. But I mean, that's kind of it. Maybe they move on from Mrazek if, he has a halfway decent year and it looks like somebody needs, a veteran goaltender for the playoffs or whatever at some point. And then you probably see Komesso. Or maybe more Stauber a little bit. toward the end of the year, but that's probably a pretty significant long shot anyways. So most likely it's the two of them for the majority of the year.
Yeah, I think what you said there, the two things you said there are probably the more intriguing parts is, A, is that if Mrazek played well enough to get flipped at the deadline for picks and or prospects, that seems like the best case scenario for him this season. And he did have a very good season or two earlier in his career. He's had some injuries. So like, it feels like there's at least like one decent season left within him, and maybe he pulls it out this year. Maybe he doesn't, who knows. But the other thing I'm interested in is if something happens with Mrazek, either he gets traded or gets hurt or whatever, the goalie that they call up, because like you mentioned, Drew Commesso, I don't know if they would, like, he might get an NHL game this year just to give him the spotlight. But I also feel like he is going to be in Rockford for at least this season and the next. And just, they're going to give him the number one spot and just let him play in the AHL, let him adapt to that level for two or three seasons and just leave him there. Don't bring him up and send him back. Just leave him there. Let him play. Let him get his feet wet at the professional level and bring up Jackson Stauber instead, or some other goalie who might be in the system somewhere.
Well, that's probably why they kept Wells around too.
Yeah.
Just to have another guy as a buffer that if you need them, they can be able to do it. And yeah, Commesso's had kind of a couple weird, like stunted development years. So I think that'd be ideal, is just to put him down there and be like, you're going to start 55 to 60 games for Rockford this year. Like, just prepare yourself like you're the number one goalie and go out and, you know, do your best and win a bunch of games.
Yeah. Get your Beefaroo frequent rewards buyer card or whatever the hell it is. I think we took most of the thoughts, Mill, about goalies, but did you have anything else?
Yeah. Hopefully nobody gets hurt.
There we go.
Okay. Mrazek is there.
Yeah.
He's like a damaged groin all the time.
So. I said what I said.
Okay.
All right. So the other group that I like, they're less intriguing. Like, I feel like for the last two or three seasons, whenever we talked about the Blackhawks bottom six, it's like they have a third line and a fourth line here, but it is like 15 guys who all belong on the fourth line filling in these spots. It seems like it's mildly better now. I feel like they have, and it's mainly the veteran guys that they have, who are more of the third line variety. So I'm just going to, the idea here, I'm going to give you three or four names, and I want you to pick out of this group who's going to play the most in Chicago this season. So we're going to leave Colin Blackwell off because he's injured, and it seems like he's going to have it's going to be a while before he gets back to the NHL level. So I got three names for you. Well, yeah, let's just go with two. Or yeah, no, wait, I got it back up to three. Sorry, programming on the fly, folks. Don't worry, we'll fix this in post. Eric, you're up, I believe. So,
okay.
Kenzie Entwistle, Boris Tkachuk, Reese Johnson, who plays the most NHL games this season?
Oh, man. Does it matter? They're all kind of a variation of the same guy to an extent, and I don't mean to be dismissive of them and their hockey playing ability. It's hard. You can tell that they like Johnson a lot. They like him in the room. Like, he seems like a guy that everybody roots for. The nice guy was Betsy's term, I believe. I think Entwistle has a little bit more to him, and he's had a couple goals in the preseason. He's had a couple opportunities. I'm just struggling to find room for any of them, you know, outside of any injuries. So I think I'm going to go Entwistle. I just feel like he probably has a little bit higher of a ceiling than anyone. And he can center, he can play wing, he can do a little bit more. He's a little bit more of a tool to be utilized, I guess.
Mill, what about you?
I'll say Entwistle, but it's funny that Eric called him a tool, and we say Reese Johnson is such a nice guy. Entwistle must not be very nice.
I believe the consensus among the media folk is that he is one of the best quotes on the team, so I guess that would make him a nice guy too.
Is he as nice as Reese, though?
We'll work on that. We'll talk to some people.
Why are the best quotes often the worst players?
Because the guys that can play don't care about talking to the media.
Or they've been conditioned to be hockey robots.
Yeah, or they've done it a billion times, right?
Mm-hmm. That makes
sense. I mean, I'm not saying that in a bad way, but I just mean that probably starts in high school. Like, Dave can probably understand what I'm saying. Like, a lot of times if you talk to the same guy every week, they're going to give you similar stuff unless something extraordinary happens. Whereas if you get somebody who doesn't get a lot of media action, they probably have had a lot more time to think about saying something.
Yeah, they have a lot more time to prepare their routine for the show.
But I'm just rolling with that whistle just because I think he's probably most useful in different phases of the game.
Yeah, I think I'd lean that way too, because I feel like Entwistle gets a little bit of PK time, and I think that might set him apart from the others. What about you, Betsy?
Well, technically, their games played last year was really close, but Tkachuk actually had he had more points. So if we're talking about like which of them might be more offensive, Tkachuk actually has more offensive results in his like short career than Entwistle does. And Tkachuk also did play on the penalty kill, I want to say. Is that, am I lying?
I'm going to effort that as you continue talking.
I know. So Reese Johnson played more than the other ones, right? No, Tkachuk. Tkachuk played. So it was Reese, then Tkachuk, then Entwistle. Entwistle only played 8 seconds on the penalty kill last year.
I could have sworn he played more than that. So completely forget what I said. We'll fix that in post too.
He played a minute and 24 seconds on the power play, which, okay, that happened. Last year, it's like a complete black hole in my head now. It's like a void. Nobody remembers it. It existed, but who can prove it?
It's like anything pre-COVID. It didn't happen.
Yeah. I'm with Eric, though. I don't know how much any of them will play. Like, are they any of them really that needed? I don't know. And then Tkachuk has the Hockey Canada stuff hanging over him.
Yeah, and it seems like there's no I think Pierre LeBrun had a tweet earlier this week that said nothing imminent, so they're still just waiting. But yeah, like to your point though, Betsy, like if your top line, like if you're roughly speaking, from what we've seen so far through camp, like your top line's Bedard, Hall, and let's say Tyler Johnson. Your second line is Athanasiou, Kurashev, and Reichel. Your third line is, I believe it's been Dickinson with Foligno and Perry. And then and then you also have Cole Gutman in there somewhere. You have Taylor Radish in there somewhere. You have Ryan Donato in there somewhere. And all of those guys would seem to be higher on the four depth chart than Entwistle or Boris Tkachuk or Reese Johnson. And like, I think one of you said, like, if somebody gets hurt, these guys are going to get called up. But initially, like, these guys played so much hockey on this team the last few seasons, it's felt like. And now there's not a spot for them, which I think tells you about the quality of the team for the last few seasons, that in one offseason, like guys that were playing decent amounts of hockey are now might be destined for Rockford.
Yeah, it's time to get serious.
Time to get to the playoffs. Let's go.
No, I mean, they're building now. It's not maintaining or nosediving down. It's, you know, the arrow's going up.
Did you guys see it was somewhere Sportsnet that they tweeted this thing that was like, are they chanting we want the cup in Chicago?
Oh, yes, yes.
And it was very clearly Detroit sucks. They don't really even sound the same, but, you know, it was the most ridiculous. Just you mentioning we want the cup a second ago reminded me of that. I was like, oh, my God, can you not hear?
Well, I think that was the joke that Vosters made on the broadcast.
Vosters needs to not make jokes because they're not good.
No.
They have no good delivery.
They said, like, I think they said the broadcast, I think one of them said, I think it was Vosters with Kaylee Chelios. I think Vosters initially said, is that a We Want the Cup chant? And then it was like, oh, no, it's not that. And then I think Kaylee Chelios like, oh, I know what that is, because she probably heard it while watching her dad play for the other team.
Why would you even think that that's a "We Want the Cup" chant? Like,
just... No, he knew that it was not. That was the joke. It's just a bad joke.
Oh, I didn't know that it was a joke. Okay. That's what I'm saying.
He has no delivery.
I wasn't paying attention as closely in that part of the broadcast because it was at the end of the game.
It's either he has terrible delivery or he needs to get hearing aids. I don't know. And
it's the delivery. Yeah, it's the delivery.
Okay. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. He can be a good guy too.
He might be a nice guy too. Okay.
Yeah. He is a nice guy. He's a very nice guy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have never met him, and his hair is suspect.
Well, you're talking about Dawson's Creek off the air. There you go. Yeah, There's a through line to the hair straight through there for you.
So do we need Betsy's hair rankings of the team? Is that how we're gonna
pick? We can do that this year if we want to.
Yeah. Okay.
We're on our own.
I'm just saying. You want me to? There's this one picture of him where his hair looks like a helmet, but like a weirdly misshapen one, and I'm like, why is it like that? So anyway, I'm going to stop. That's mean.
I'm not going to participate in any of these conversations as the follically challenged person that I am. So
he's not my favorite guy in the booth. Let's just, I just,
okay.
Well, probably, I'm taking it out on his hair.
Okay. Well, anyway, speaking of players with hair, I was desperately trying to get a segue out of that, and it didn't work. So there's two players left that I feel like we have not talked about, and I think they are two of the more interesting players beyond the headline attractions of like Bedard, Reichel, Kaiser, and all that, because they're both like roughly mid-20s, and so they haven't necessarily been around for a while, but they're on that cusp of either like they probably need to show something pretty soon or they may not be around for much longer. And those two players are Cole Gutman and Taylor Radish. And so I think the question, and I think I'm back to Mill now, and this is perfect because that'll be the end of the rotation. I think the question with these two is they're both restricted free agents at the end of the season. So I'll go over under 1.5 Mill. How many between those two guys over under 1.5 is back with the team next season?
I don't like this under over.
Okay.
You know, what's it, 2.5 or 1.5?
It's 1.5 out of two players. So basically, do you think they're both back or just one's back?
Okay, that's what you're asking me. You know what? I'm going to say under. I think that they're going to have a lot of overhaul next season, and I'm just kind of trying to preface it based on like past teams, which obviously it's not a one for one example. But if you think about the overturn between like 07, 08, 08, 09,
mm-hmm.
it feels like if you weren't really significant and they felt like you can really upgrade you in that time, then they were going to do that. Now, this is a different regime, but it feels more so that they want to do that kind of thing. That's just kind of my two cents.
No, I think those are all fair points. Betsy, what about you?
I didn't actually hear the question.
Between
I was distracted by pictures. Go ahead.
Are you judging more people's haircuts?
No, I was trying to find the picture that I was thinking of when I picture Vosters in my brain. That's mean. Yeah. Anyway, sorry.
It's Cole Gutman and Taylor Radish. How many of them will be back next season over under 1.5?
Gutman will be back. I don't think Radish will.
Yeah, because I think that's where I'm going to ask Eric first, and then I think we'll talk about this a little bit more. So, Eric, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm taking the under two. I feel like with the free agent class that's going to be available next summer, with some of the other guys that they might have being ready, and for some reason to me, Radish just feels like he got 20 last year. He could be a guy that they trade to a contending team that has like use for that type of middle six, playoff bolstering roster type of thing. So I feel like he could get moved if he has a pretty decent year. But that's Gutman could hang around and be a useful third or fourth line center, but Radish kind of feels a little bit more dispensable for whatever reason. So yeah, I'll agree with everyone and go under.
Yeah, because I think I said, I feel like we had the exact conversation at some point late last season where Taylor Radish was at or near his 20 goal total for the season, and I was trying to remember any of the goals that he had scored, and I could not. That like he has a decent season, like 37 points is not awful by any means, but it just felt like there was I can't think of any big like Taylor Radish moments like I could about other players or just instances where you're like, all right, I think this guy might have something. I feel like Cole Gutman in his incredibly small sample size last season had a lot more standout moments than Taylor Radish had in playing pretty much the entire season. Like Cole Gutman played 14 games and made a pretty good impact, and Taylor Radish played 78, and I feel like I can't tell you anything he did during them. So maybe he changes that this season because he is that was his first full NHL season, so at least there's like, you know, there's reason to argue that he could have room to improve still, but he probably needs to do it real soon here.
I also feel like it's telling that he hasn't gotten a look with Hall and Bedard. Like if they thought he had more to give, I feel like, why wouldn't you put him up there? And maybe they will at some point. But that I kind of thought that he just kind of de facto ended up on whatever the third or fourth, however you want to designate those lines, was kind of like, okay, that made me feel like they were kind of, you know, making a little bit of a statement about where they see him in the future.
Yeah, it's like you can I think anytime line combinations come out in the preseason, everyone tries, conclusions can be drawn by who gets paired with who, and that kind of gives you an idea of long-term standing within the organization for those players. So yeah, I think that's a good point. Bessie, did you have anything else to add on those two players?
No, I'm excited to see Gutman. I really enjoyed watching him in Rockford. And like you said, he made a positive impression up here. I'm a little wary about where they have him. I don't think that's necessary, unless they make that fourth line the energy line, where they get a lot of offensive zone and they're just out there to like go wee a lot. I don't know if it's this, the way they transition for this year is both good because they got enough vets that aren't too, like, they're not quite the level of a previous vet, so they're not going to take away from the kids. But it also, the only two kids that are actually in the top six are Bedard and Reichel. So it's like they're only really propping those ones up. So yeah. We'll see. I mean, Kurashev, if he plays with Reichel, will be in the top, but it's hard. I know he's 23, so he's a kid, but he's been around for fucking ever.
Yeah, I know. It feels like it. I think there's so much. So I think this is kind of where I will end this discussion. We'll go back to the top and go Betsy, Eric, and Mill in that order. But I think just the general idea, I think this entire season has I don't want to say too wide of a range of points where the Hawks could end up, because I don't think they're not going to be good unless something insane happens. I mean, they're not even going to be league average just because there's a lot of youngsters on this team. But I also think because of all the youngsters on this team, like there is, I don't know. And again, I think this is something I'm mildly more bullish on than maybe anybody else here. I'm not going to tell you the Hawks are going to make the playoffs. I don't even think they're going to be like contending for it in like April. The way I would preface this statement is, if you get like three or four guys that are unexpectedly good that really pop off, like if say like Kaiser, Reichel, and Kurashev all pop off this season, I feel like you could have a team that maybe like in January or February goes on a bit of a heater, flirts with a wild card spot for a while, and then flames out at the end. I think that's probably your ultimate ceiling for this team. And I think the floor is the highest draft lottery odds for Mac or Celebrini next year. So Betsy, I would, with that thought in mind, I guess I would ask what your thoughts are in terms of floor and ceiling for this team.
It's probably about the same. But the main reason that they'd flirt with the playoffs is that the Central's supposed to be pretty
big. Thank you for saying that, because that's another big point, is the Central Division kind of sucks this year.
Yeah, it's the Avalanche and then the Stars are the decent-ish teams. The Wild could be decent, but they also could suck. I feel like they could go back and
forth. That's the Minnesota Wild's entire existence. And they will somehow end up right in the middle of it, like they always do.
Yeah, but like the Jets, the Preds, the Blues, and the Coyotes are all not good teams either, you know, this year. One of them is going to perform, one or two of them are going to perform better, and this could be the Blackhawks too, just because of how mediocre to bad this division is. So I could see that. I don't think they'll be as bad as they were last year, so I don't think they're going to be in the bottom like three again, but I wouldn't count out like fifth from the bottom.
Okay.
Like, yeah, bottom 5 to 10 wouldn't surprise me at all. Especially if Mrazek, like, is Mrazek. And then Soderblom has like a good but not great rookie season. Like, yeah, that would be my guess.
All right. Eric, where are you at?
I think that they're top five pick, like in the running for that. I think Arizona is going to be kind of surprisingly good in the Central this year. It could be an interesting team. But no, I mean, it's hard because there's so many kind of, you know, X factors at play. They should definitely be a lot more enjoyable to watch. They should be a lot more competitive. You know, Richardson, that was kind of the mantra, was Richardson squeezed every drop of compete out of, you know, that garbage team last year that he could, maybe even overperformed a little bit. So it'll be interesting now that we get to kind of see him like utilize matchups and strategy and stuff a little bit more than we got to see him do last year. But I still just think that there's too many question marks and too many holes. So, yeah, I don't think that they ever are even close to 500 or, you know, sniffing wild card or playoffs or anything like that. To me, they feel like they're a, you know, bottom five, maybe, you know, bottom six, bottom seven, if they do pretty well and go on a little bit of a run.
Mill, what about you?
Like everyone else said, I wouldn't be surprised to see them towards the bottom or at least in a higher draft situation. Just because the state of the team, you know, we don't expect Bedard to carry it all. And also, too, hopefully nobody gets hurt, but those time things do happen. And a couple of key guys missing time could really affect their situation pretty drastically. You know, I mean, I kind of also see them sort of topping out towards the not playoffs by any means, but towards the upper end of the teams missing the playoffs, if that makes sense.
Okay, so
not like within reach, but just like, you know, not the worst. They could top out a little higher.
Like number 20 in the league overall, maybe a little like
maybe like 22.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And the reason I say that is, you know, you guys got me thinking about the back end of the season, and it could go like, hey, they trade a bunch of guys away, guys miss time, or it could be kind of, hey, you know, we have the group we have and everyone's putting it together, and who knows? I don't know. Yeah. The power plays 22%.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't wager on that. I'm just saying it could happen.
Yeah, and I think we should reiterate once again, regardless of where they end up, they are, by God, going to be so much more interesting than they were last season. I mean, just watching preseason, like, I think I've watched in the like last 5 or 6 years, I think I've maybe watched a period or two of preseason hockey just because it just wasn't interesting. I've watched 3 full games mainly because Connor Bedard was skating in them, and he alone makes his team more interesting. But then also you factor in, you know, the Reichels and Kurashevs and Kaisers. Like there's a lot more things to watch about this team this season than last year. And that just it's such a relief. I'm so glad that there's something interesting about this team to watch and write and talk about, and should be a fun year to do so. So any final thoughts, anything we missed? I think we covered pretty much every name on the roster. Even talked about the coach a little bit there at the end. So Betsy, anything else?
No, I think we've covered it.
Eric, what about you?
Yeah, no, there's nothing else jumping out at me.
All right, Mill.
I just hope that we all have an enjoyable season, both writing and on the podcast together, and everybody in the comments section. I hope it's a lot more fun. It's been pretty brutal the last couple of years. I think we had a lot of setbacks with the team on and off the ice, the state of the website. So hopefully we're moving forward from all of that, and we can just have a lot of fun.
Yeah. Absolutely. I would echo every single part of that. And one thing I was going to mention this in the preamble and I forgot. So I want to do this here real quickly. So, I think this has happened a few times in the past, and I think I've referenced it a few times in the past, but, we do have media credentials for covering Blackhawks games this season. I should say we have the opportunity to request them for games, and every time we have requested them, they have been granted. Now, myself and Eric are the only two on this show and on the site that are within a reasonable driving distance of Chicago. Mills right on the cusp of it, but
I get to UC in about 45 minutes.
Really? I would have taken the over on that. So
I mean, usually if there's traffic, but I can do it.
So the point of all this is to say that, like, part of the content you're going to get from us this season, what we are going to try real hard to do is, like, we're going to have the ability to interview players and sit in on press conferences and ask questions to the coaches and players in there. And that is going to go into some of the exclusive content that you can sign up for with our two subscription tiers. It's just we all have full-time jobs outside of this this website that we're all working together on. So we are not going to be at every game and every practice, and we're not going to be tweeting updates every single day, but we hope we're going to get there enough to talk to some players and get some interesting stories and just to get something. I have no idea what it's going to be like. I have no idea what exactly we're going to get. We did have, there's an article on Ethan Del Mastro right when training camp opened. So you can go back in the archives and read that. It's only a week or two old. I'm not entirely sure what it is going to be, but we are going to try and do something. And I'm very excited about that opportunity. So that should be a lot of fun too. But other than that, I think that's it for our hockey talk. And we got running a little long here, so I want to get to our food take quickly. And this was mine. And this was actually part of my dinner this evening. So I had some Chinese food for dinner. And I think I have the one Chinese food item that, depending on which Chinese restaurant you go to, has the highest variance between being really, really good or just terrible, and that is crab rangoon. If you go to a place that makes a really good crab rangoon, cherish that place and adore it and worship it and patronize it as much as possible, because there is something about that particular item that – is not easy. It seems like it is not easy to make, and if it is very easy to screw up. And when places do it right, it is so damn good. And I'm just saying that because I had it about an hour and a half ago, and I can still taste it a little bit. So that's my food take. Anybody have any other thoughts on the Chinese food that offers the highest variance in terms of quality?
Not well. Piggybacking off of that a little bit, I feel like I can tell instantly, like, if you're having a new Chinese place, by the first bite of an egg roll, I can tell whether or not I'm going to like the food. Like, if the egg roll is on point, and maybe it's just there's a certain kind of style, you know, or regional flair that I grew up eating that lends itself, you know, to the type of Chinese food that I like. But I could usually tell right away off, you know, the first bite of an egg roll, whether or not I'm going to like the rest of the meal.
Yeah, I would have said any of the appetizers would be the ones that have the largest variety, because it's always the ones that have wrappers involved. Because what can make or break an egg roll, a spring roll, a crab rangoon, any of those that have like wrappers, is whatever, how thick or thin or crispy that wrapper is. Because if you've ever had a egg roll that has too thick of a pastry, wrapped around it, it's, you're like, it's disgusting. Like, it just makes everything not, you're automatically like, well, this meal's going to suck. So like, that's my, the most disappointing thing is when you get a bad egg roll or spring roll to me. And those are the ones that are the most hit or miss.
Yeah, I will say there was an egg roll with this food and it was also delightful. So, you know what? Shout out to China Coon and Griffith in Northwest Indiana. Wonderful place. Highly recommend. We should get them to sponsor the show so they can give us free food. But yeah, go check that place out. Mill, do you have any thoughts on that?
I disagree with what you guys all said, but I did want to toss something out there since this is the season premiere.
Please do.
About a month and a half ago, my doctor had me go back on eating meat.
Oh,
so okay. I'll have Big way news. More food takes. Yeah, Big I'll news. Have way more food takes. I'm like a garbage disposal lately. It's great.
Was there like, were you like protein deficient or something?
A little bit of that. And just, I was having some stomach stuff going on. And he's just like, look, just like, you know, working into your diet, you know, eat some chicken or whatever. And I'm like, great. And I'm just going to buy pork chops and steak and, you know, everything he doesn't want me to eat.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
but, you know, it's been a good, it's basically I'm back.
What was the first thing that you ate?
Chicken. It was like a rotisserie chicken.
Okay.
But it was homemade. My uncle, he had a barbecue, so I went over there and he had chicken on the charcoal grill, like the beer chicken.
Ooh, okay.
So it wasn't really rotisserie, but it's kind of like that. And then I slowly kind of reintroduced the red meat, so now I've been kind of eating everything. Gyro and gyro burger,
ooh.
I missed it so much.
Yeah.
So I'll be trying everything. For? I wasn't like full vegan, but I was vegetarian for like 7.5 years.
Okay. Wow.
So I'm going to go to the United Center and try everything.
Yeah. Man, your tummy must have been like, grr, the entire time, like the very first couple of times. If I go really long between eating just eggs, the next time I have eggs, my stomach is like, what the fuck are you putting in you?
You know, I think it's on a per person basis because surprisingly it felt fine. But I think it's because I wasn't eating meat, but I drink so much like coffee and caffeine and booze, I guess.
You're like, my body is trash in here. So at least this is.
Yeah.
You gotta keep your intestines on their toes.
Yeah. So that'll be fun for the food takes.
Okay. All right. Well,
just wanted to toss that out there.
Every once in a while, I'm going to have a Southern one, just a purely Southern food take for you guys. I've decided that's going to be my contribution this year.
Oh, well, please do. I mean,
Grits was a recurring character.
I know.
Yeah, but I'm sure there's plenty of other delightful Southern food dishes that we have not discussed yet.
We also talked about how macaroni is a vegetable in the South. So
that's right.
That I was going to say, you can make up all kinds of stuff and we will just have no idea whether or not any of it is true.
Yeah.
That's also true. We won't even Google it.
We're within a circle of trust here, Betsy. We're going to need you to not make us look like Northern idiots. I know us damn Yankees up here can be gullible at times, but.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to having some overpriced food at the UC with everybody soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, then I think that is going to do it for this edition of Musings on Madison. And again, we're all really excited. I think we're glad the games are here and the season's here and we get to see wherever the hell this ride's going to take us next. Should be a lot of fun. Well, let's hope it's good. I mean, like We had our discussion about the other Chicago teams lately and everything that they've been doing to us. So maybe this one just like just the odds should be in the favor of the Blackhawks having a fun season because there's been so many miserable ones. So but that's going to do it for this episode. Thank you to Betsy and Eric and Mill for hanging out tonight. Thanks to you for listening. And we'll be back on our should be a weekly schedule now with this episode. And again, stay tuned to the website. A whole bunch of stuff going up there all season. We're going to mix in some other podcast stuff too. We got a lot of stuff and the more support we get, the more stuff we can do. So anything you can do to help us out and keep this place humming along at full speed would be much appreciated. But I guess the next time we talk to you, we will be talking after a few Connor Bedard games in Chicago or as a member of the Chicago Blackhawks at least. And we can't wait to do that. And we'll talk to you then.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.